This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 591, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 591. I am Josh Flanagan, along with my co-host Ron Richards.
Hello, Josh.
And Connor Kilpatrick is making a run for the border again.
I don't know who he pissed off this time, but all I know is it's bad.
I just thought that the size of that shipment was ostentatious.
He flew too close to the sun this time, folks. So let's, if you can say a prayer, let's hope that he's all right, that he makes it through one.
You know what? A man is responsible for his own choices. I don't know. Man.
Yeah.
We are iFanboy, and we are responsible for our own choices. Every week we read a stack of comics, which was a choice. One of us picks their favorite book, another one, and we call that the pick of the week. We were going to talk about that book and other books from the week, which we chose together. The patron pick, and maybe if we have some time, we'll read some listener mail. There's two jamokes, so you never know. It either goes long or short. It never goes short. I don't know what I'm talking about. It should be fun. That's the deal. Here is your spoiler warning. This is a review show, so we're going to talk about what happens in those books. There will be spoilers. You haven't read them. Not our problem. Ron, you had the pick.
Yes, I had the pick. And Matter of Inches, folks. You know, sometimes that last book in your stack is the one that grabs you. And this week, that's exactly what happened with our pick of the week. It's a book that recent listeners know that I've been reading. It is called Eleanor and the Egret, issue number 3. It's written by John Layman with art by Sam Keith and colors by Rhonda Pattison. I love this book. This book is so, I don't know. I mean, I know exactly what it is, but like, it is so not anything I expected from the world. We know John Layman from Chew, and we know that he has a very, let's say, a wacky sensibility in the world, right? And Sam Keith is one of my favorite creators going on 25 years now, 26 years. I mean, you know, like I first tuned into him on Marvel Comics Presents in 1992, I think. And then of course the Max. And then we've had spotty, spotty releases from him over the past 10 years or so. But with this is an ongoing monthly series that he is not shortchanging the art in any way. And it's got his wonderful cartooning style mixed with a just really weird Agatha Christie Poirot kind of mystery, like art thievery mystery going on. And I love this book. I love it. So now this is the third issue, and Josh, I was so excited about this. I gave you this issue. I bought it for you. And partially in the hopes that we would have something to talk about so we wouldn't get me talking for 10 minutes.
Wants that.
But B, also because I'm really curious kind of what your take on reading it is as well too. So I would love to hear what you thought of it.
I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah.
I my initial instinct is that Layman and Keith are a strange pairing,
but it works.
Saying it doesn't. Like if I sort of extract and think about it, like I get that actually in a way, because you would have said Rob Guillory was a weird pairing for anybody, but we got so used to it. And so there are bits of this in here that I was like, "Oh, there's Layman. That's the guy I understand." And like I think outside of Chew, I think I've only ever really read his Big Two stuff,
right?
Which is pretty straightforward. It's not that wacky sort of stuff. So I don't know that I know what this was. I felt very much like I think I was missing the first couple issues because I hadn't read them.
Well, I was hoping that maybe the art triggered with, of course, because you didn't read the first issues, but no, I'm hoping you go back and read the first two issues. I mean, it definitely is difficult if you're not reading this, like this is in the middle of the story, right?
Right, but sometimes you can do that.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
In this one, you couldn't. So right. You know, if you're out there thinking about going to pick up three, I don't recommend it.
I would definitely say go back and read from issue one onwards because there's little nuance and stuff like that. But ultimately, and what's funny, what sealed the deal for me was like I had another book all set to be the pick. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. And I was a little bit of reluctance, and I was open to something kind of changing my mind. And I opened Eleanor and the Igret, and sure enough, what is on that first page?
But I got to go back because I'm in the middle.
It's a cutaway. We see in the prologue. We go back in time where we see a boarding house, and Sam Keith has drawn a cutaway where we see what's going on in each room. And I was like, oh, there's a cutaway. That's fantastic, right? And so that got me kind of starting off. But then as the story progressed, we get a little bit of a the prologue kind of gives us a sense. I don't really know what's going on in the prologue. The prologue just shows a boarding house where there are different artistic types creating. There's a couple of writers. There's a writer. There's a mathematician. There's a seamstress. And there's a painter. And then ultimately the painter is painting and something is wrong and the paint isn't sticking to the canvas. And that's when the prologue ends. And then we go back to our main story where the target of the artist who is the target of the art thievery by Eleanor and her Egret is having a gallery showing. And the investigator, the detective who's on the case is, hoping that the art thief makes, they're trying to set up a trap for her. Right. Meanwhile, the detective has kind of got the hots for the suspect. And sure enough, the suspect, the girl, Eleanor, kind of got a crush on the detective. Right? And so you got little elements of that. And then at the same time, there's this kind of boogeyman that's been set loose by the artist who is, also at the location. And he strikes. And he's got this weird, creepy snake thing, and the issue ends with a cliffhanger where the snake grabs the egret and bites its neck, and it screams in pain, and that was a good kind of cliffhanger for me. So this issue had a little bit of everything. It moved the story along. It had a good cliffhanger. It had a lot of little kind of subtle touches. There's some points, like early on when the art gallery is setting up for the exhibit, a couple of touches of Tintin. In terms of the art style, like you see when the Eleanor shows up and she's the way she gets by the detective is she's dressed up in a disguise delivering an ice sculpture, and she's covered the egret in makeup to look like it's an ice sculpture of a swan, and she's got her hair pulled back in a ponytail and a hat, but she's got a fake mustache, and there's one panel where her eyes are drawn like those white circles like Tintin.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, that's cute. That's I picked up on that. This is a very.
You know what she actually reminded me of when she's in disguise in those panels, the little line drawing? It made me think of Terry Moore.
Yes, I can see that.
Yep. When he would do the more cartoony sections, usually not the sort of main part of the story. And I was thrown for a second. I was like, wait a minute, what am I reading? So that reminded me of that. I really liked – see, I don't think I caught – when we went from the prologue to the to the current stuff with the sort of timeline I was looking at, because the painter looks like the same person.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that, like, I don't know either. Like, we don't know. It just says some time ago. And the painter, I assume the painter in the prologue is the artist in the dress and the gown here. But she does look like Eleanor, the main character. So that's a little confusing. I can see that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, talk about range of Sam Keith. I mean, like, to go from cartooning to the first double page spread that's all kind of like that colored pencil kind of look, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he really shifts gears a lot in this book in terms of art style, like all the way to the Tim Burton-esque monster at the end, the guy with the top hat.
Yep.
You know, like, I don't know. I like the range that Sam Keith shows in 20 pages of a comic book, I think, is just amazing.
Here's what I can tell you.
Yeah.
I understand that you like Sam Keith a lot, and this is a good place for him to be. I've never been into it very much. I wasn't reading it when it first came. I was going to say I wasn't around, but that's not true. I think that, again, I was a little lost, but I feel like when I've read his work on its own, I have been completely lost. Yeah. Whereas this, you have the anchor of a guy who knows how to tell a story in a more mainstream conventional way with John Layman. So I think that is giving you – Maybe it's a better entry.
It's a good balance. That's the thing. Is that, like, the thing about Sam Keith is Sam Keith has always been about kind of unfettered or unrestricted creativity, in my mind. Yep. You know, like, he's gone nuts on the page, and he draws these kind of amazing, you know, looking monsters and beings and things like that. But he could also really depict really strong emotion and personality in people. Like, you know, when someone's sad in a Sam Keith book, you get it. You know, like, you totally understand it. The Max was great because he worked with William Messner Loebs on it, on the story. Mm-hmm. And I think that balanced him out. And here, him working with John Layman is balancing out that creativity and giving it a focus. And I think that's where Sam Keith really shines. And I think Layman has got, you know, again, an irreverent take on things, in that it's a lot of fun. So
I'm also getting that John Layman seems to be one of those guys who can really target his work for the artist that he's working with.
Yeah.
I think...
Well, that goes back to him being an editor. Like, he started out as an editor.
Yeah, that's true.
But
it's a talent. I mean, like, he when he was working with Guillory, like, he's like, how can I tailor this story so that we're working as best together? And then the other guy comes out. Like Guillory has a chance to shine during that. And I think that's what's happening here. Yeah. He's like, you know, he's I'm working with Sam Keith, so we're going to do a Sam Keith appropriate story.
Yep.
And that's part talent, part experience and everything. But I think that's interesting.
Yeah. So I would recommend. I mean, Josh, if you're interested, I'll buy you the first two issues if you want to read the whole thing and catch up. I mean, like, I think it's a lot of fun. But I encourage anybody who's curious about, you know, who's curious about what John Layman's doing after Chew, and, you know, clearly this is not, you know, this isn't a licensed property. This is something that Layman came up with. It. I love the whimsical mystery angle to it. You know, and then adding in the star-crossed lover kind of romance thing of, you know, the detective falling for the suspect, like, that's fun. And then just, like, the out-there gonzo kind of art of Keith is just, like, it's just, again, this is, like, the things that resonate with me are the things that are unlike anything that are on the stands.
Sure.
And that's one of the things I love. So definitely strongly recommend it. And again, like, you know, maybe if I read this first, or it may, you know, if it didn't have that cutaway, who knows? But the pick of the week could have been, by inches, it was nearly the Batman Elmer Fudd special number one from DC. So now, I wasn't on the show last week. I was dealing with a personal matter. a personal matter that involved a lot of barbecue, that's for sure. And so I didn't get to hear, and I haven't listened to the show yet because I'm busy. I didn't get to hear your take on these DC Looney Tunes crossovers, but my guess is that you are not a fan.
So far, I think there are parts of them that were interesting. There were parts of the, I think it's like a lot of the Hanna-Barbera stuff that they're doing, where it's like, all right, this is kind of interesting. For most of it, like, who is this for? Why are you doing this?
Well,
I didn't read the other ones.
Yeah. Okay.
I looked through them. Like, I checked them out. I did read the two from this week, though.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because when Connor and I talked about them 2 weeks ago, when you were off the show, when you were dealing with a personal matter, I just love saying that, by the way, because the suggestion of dealing with a personal matter is that, like it's when you're at work, like, oh, I have a personal matter to attend to. It's just like, ooh, what's going on? Like, it just, it inspires speculation, right?
I know. I was wondering for a second. And I was like, wait, I know everything that's going on. No, he's bullshitting.
Okay. Anyway, so when we read the first batch, I was fairly critical of the Martian Manhunter, Marvin the Martian, because I felt as if the emphasis on making the Looney Tune character fit into the DC comic world didn't work, and that you needed to either meet in the middle a little more or have the DC character come to the Looney Tune side of things more, like in order for it to work, just because the Looney Tunes characters are just so cartoonish and that sort of thing.
I agree with you, but I think that that is the easier solution, and that a talented team, as we're going to see with this book we're talking about, can make it work.
Well, that's my point because Batman, Elmer Fudd, made me eat my words, because Tom King and the great Lee Weeks, who I'm a big fan of Lee Weeks.
That guy needs to be on a Batman book.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just stupid that he's not.
So they show up with Batman, Elmer Fudd, and proceed to take the entire cast of Looney Tunes and place them in Gotham in a way that is completely believable, that is completely, I want to say, natural and not weird, and tell a goddamn great noirish, noir-y kind of story with Batman and fucking Elmer Fudd.
Yeah. And the Martian.
Everyone was in it.
So, I know, but very specifically, when he said Illudium Q36 Space Modulator, I was like, that's awesome.
That's the thing. And so, like, the thing is that, like, taking the catchphrases and shoehorning them in and things like that can be cringeworthy, right? This is going to be a theme for this episode, because we're talking about it later in this episode. But you were saying, Josh, it can be?
I mean, it can be, but again, like, there's threading the needle, and that seems to be what happened here.
Yes.
I mean, if I had any complaint, it's that I have I hate reading like a lot of dialogue that is done in the vernacular, in the accent. So like it was a little like, oh, just write.
After two pages, I was laughing.
No, I get it. I do, and I like when there were like challenges about how to write it, and I was going through it, and I liked the commitment to it. I suppose like I don't even like it when Garth Ennis does it for our space. Like I'm like, all right, give me the translation, but it really worked.
Yeah.
And it worked in large part. I think the script was really tight, and it was just the right amount of, we know this is stupid, and just the right amount of, but we're going to take it seriously. And then the art being just stellar, in the same way that with the Flintstones, that does not work without the art being just right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Lee Weeks's pencils on this were just like absolutely perfect and sold it. And he had enough of the characteristics of the characters to make them recognizable, but not have it be shove it down your throat. And you know, basically what the premise of the story is that Elmer Fudd is a hitman. Right, and he's in love. He's fallen in love with Silver St. Cloud, the famous Gotham actress, and he believes that she's been murdered by a lowlife named Bugs, who has buck teeth and eats carrots, and so he goes to kill Bugs for revenge. And Bugs says, "Don't kill me. I was hired by Bruce Wayne." And so Elmer goes, "Okay, well, I'm going to kill Bruce Wayne." And so he goes after Bruce Wayne, only to attempt to kill him and have Batman pay him a visit. And then Batman find out that he's talking about Silver St. Cloud, who Batman is involved with as well. And so they decide to investigate together to get to the bottom of it. And turns out Silver St. Cloud has rejected both Batman and Elmer Fudd for their violent ways, and set up her murder to get, so she can get away from Elmer. Very heartbreaking story. And during that, there's a big bar fight at the bar called Porky's, which is owned by the bartender named Porky, who's got a pug, has got a pig nose. And that's where we see Marvin the Martian, we see Sylvester, and we see everybody. And it just worked. I can't believe it, but it worked.
Well, yeah, and there was also a little bit of, I saw a couple of articles before it came up, before it came out, and they were really touting, and I was like, all right, let's not oversell this thing.
Yeah.
I saw one that was like, this is the best issue of the year. And I was like, all right, it's really good, but let's, it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
It's impressive and it's cool. And it just to praise just Lee Weeks one more time, from the point of view of constructing a comic book, like he had to design, like it wasn't like he just drew one issue. He had to redesign all of these characters and do a thing, which I bet was a lot of fun, but that's a lot of work that went into making this.
And also I would like to note that he draws Batman in the proper costume without any yellow lines or anything like that. It's just the classic black bat on the chest.
We were so lucky to get years of that. And that was just a standard through the 2000s. And then I want to go even further and just say, I think the thing that actually impressed me more was the backup story that was just a straight up cartoon, but with Batman in it. And it was pitch perfect.
Yeah. It's funny because for me, the backups have really been the moments, the highlights, because they're doing both. Like earlier when I said that you put the Looney Tunes characters in the comics and then you put the comics in the Looney Tunes characters, and the backups have done the putting the DC comics into Looney Tunes, and they've been much shorter, but they've all been pitch perfect, both from an art standpoint as well as a story standpoint. And this one was great, I thought.
It really was.
Yeah, it was really good. And this one was also written by Tom King with art by Byron Vaughns. But yeah, no, this was nearly pick of the week because this was just so strong. It's great stuff. But then also came out this week was Jonah Hex Yosemite Sam special, which is written by Jimmy Palmiotti with art by Mark Teixeira, who I haven't seen in a while. And you're a big Jonah Hex fan.
Yeah, I kind of had to read it.
Yeah.
Because of that. I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did. I liked it. It was... I don't know. I liked that they, like, Yosemite Sam was actually the good guy.
Yep.
Like, they didn't make him the villain. Like, he was, that was actually, I think, a good choice, because if you had to watch him being, like, he was kind of competent and tough and short and blowhardy, but he wasn't the bad guy, basically.
Yeah.
No. I thought that was interesting. And it actually provided a pretty nice contrast. You know, if you stop thinking about that it's Looney Tunes, it's almost a pretty straight-ahead Jonah Hex story. And then Foghorn Leghorn shows up, and I was like, all right, respect for just owning that.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, there's literally, like, they shoehorn Foghorn Leghorn into it, and I love Foghorn Leghorn, by the way. He's one of my favorite of all the Looney Tunes, you know. And there's a moment where, like, well, you look mighty weird, and he's like, yes, I do, and then they just moved on. Like, it just didn't...
And it wasn't a world of lots of pigs and chickens or whatever.
Nope. You know,
he's just one giant chicken-headed man.
Yep.
and you know, the dialogue was... Foghorn Leghorn, and it was fine. It was funny. It was maybe, you know, a skosh too long. I was like, all right, I get it. Let's move along.
What I like is literally how they deal with it, is that when he introduces himself in, you know, I say, allow me to introduce myself, right? And he's part of the circus folk, right? And then Yosemite Sam says, I've never seen a fellow look like you before. And he goes, that's all right. And then, can I pay you back? And then they just go on. Like, they never explain it or anything, which is bravo, Jimmy Palmiotti. Yep. Bravo.
Don't need it. I was trying to see if I could feel the absence of Justin Gray, who was Palmiotti's writing partner
Or Amanda Connor, who's been...
Jonah Hex.
Yeah.
Well, no, but Jonah Hex specifically. Like, they co-wrote every issue together. And I think I'd noticed it a little. Okay. There's just a little bit different. Jimmy's a little less subtle. Then I think that's what I'm guessing Justin Gray added to it. But it was a fun Jonah Hex issue that was super ridiculous. And then again, the backup was fun.
Backup was all right. Backup wasn't as strong. I mean, the backup was written by Bill Matheny with art by Dev Alvarez, which it was fine.
It was fun. Like, it was fun to look at, basically.
I like the art style. Yeah, agreed.
Yep.
But I feel like we should have ratings these books, because they were like the special aspect of it. But this was the strongest week of the Looney Tunes stuff.
Oh,
I think. Yeah, by far. Yeah. So, I still can't believe that Lee Weeks art. I would read Batman drawn by Lee Weeks for sure.
Every time he shows up in something, and I'm specifically thinking it was a Batman story he did, and there was a Daredevil story he did a few years ago.
And do you remember that? Now I'm dating myself, but like 10 years ago. But do you remember that Captain Marvel story he did?
Kind of.
He did a Captain Marvel, like it was Captain Marvel The Return or something like that. It was
like Marvel.
Marvel, yeah. And it was just like, God damn, this is good.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah.
I don't know. This Batman looked like a little bit like if Gabe Hardman had finally gotten to do Batman.
Yes, yeah.
Had a lot of that going on, which is, I guess, not for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's older and can draw less or whatever. You know, I mean, like he's born in 62. I mean, like he's a guy. I don't know what he's doing in all this time, but I think he's great.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
So I really like Defenders number 2.
So did I. This book is really good. This book,
right?
This
I'm
book
not,
is so. This,
I'm
book
not
is,
wrong.
This book is so good that I actually dropped a note to Bendis to tell him that I liked it.
A couple of things. Immediately, when I first look at it, I'm like, I don't know if Dave Marquez is the right guy to be doing it. Yeah. And then in the middle of it, there was, I'm going to go ahead and call this, the best Daredevil page that I have seen since those early days of Chris Omni.
Of him landing on the roof?
No, it's literally the one page spread where you don't even see him. It's just his Billy Club taking everybody out.
Yep. Yes, that page was amazing.
I almost dropped him a note because I was like, that's top level work right there. And then the next page, him dropping down, is also great.
I think the art on this book, Dave Marquez, like we've been talking about Dave Marquez, since he did the big event and all the stuff like that. But the Daredevil arriving on the roof to talk to Ben, I was like, whoa. And then even the three pages with Blade and the humor that kind of went with that, like, got across the emotion and Jessica being concerned and Luke coming out of the coma. But then that Daredevil action sequence was just like, wow, those two pages were something special. And even the Iron Fist page where like page after page was just great. So
here's funny is that we have seen every single superhero get like redesigned with a stupid costume. Yeah. Then Blade comes along whose costume is exactly the same. It looks like a redesign, and they're like, "No, we'll just stick with that."
It was already stupid.
literally looks like a DC redesign.
Yeah. But also what I like about this is that we're two issues in, and like this issue ends like on a pretty big cliffhanger with the inclusion of the Punisher, and like this is quickly shaping up to be like the street level. I mean, I know it was supposed to mirror the Netflix stuff, which is the street level stuff, or you know whatnot. But like this collection of characters in this environment is just like, yeah, this is a Marvel that I like, and it's clear that it's like this is almost like, why did it take Bendis this long to do something like this?
I feel like maybe we're getting to a point where Bendis is actually getting back to what he's good at.
Yeah.
He spent so long with the Avengers. It was good for a while, but then the
X-Men detour the and then the Guardians. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That stuff. But these guys, you know, these characters, like he's written Jessica Jones. He's written Daredevil really, really well. That Daredevil costume is stupid.
Yeah.
besides, that's why I like that one page. He's not in it.
Yeah.
But I actually thought the weird lighting in the scene, I just kind of was like, wait, is he in the normal costume or not? No, that's fine. It was really good. And like at the end, I was like, you know, it's a pretty cliched move to put in Punisher at the very end. But I was like, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
No issue.
I really like the way that was told, actually, when the three of them were shot.
Yeah.
They're going to be like Trank bolts, but whatever.
No, this is, yeah, exactly. But this is great. I mean, there's two issues in, and like if they time this for the trade to be out when the show comes out, then I will tell people who are watching the show to go pick this up because this is smart. Yeah. So
when I finished this, I was like, oh, that could be a pick of the week. That's definitely a possibility. And then what I guess my pick would have been.
I was going to say, did you then remember that I had the pick?
No, I just think, a lot of times I'll be like, oh, good luck with all that.
Right.
When I don't have the pick, which is great. But I would have gone with Rebels, these Free and Independent States number 4, which is, I mean, I know Connor can't be here and you don't have to listen to me talk about it for a really long time, but I think this is either the second to last or maybe there's two more of these. Basically, it's a story of this guy who is the son of the guy from the first miniseries that they did, which, again, I don't know how this miniseries exists. I don't know who buys it. I can't imagine there's an audience for it. But it's during the War of 1812, and this guy, he's sort of basically like an autistic guy who builds ships, and he's excellent at that, but he's bad at everything else. So, you know, like a high functioning kind of thing. And so he's bad. He's on the ship because he needs to be there, but he's bad at doing everything else that would go along with sort of military service or being an officer or whatever. But he knows ships really well. But the guy who's the captain of the ship is sort of his big patron. And there's a huge military battle between the ships that go out at sea, which is great. I've never seen that or haven't seen it very often in comics. And it's really fun to watch. And the captain dies. And so everybody else who sort of didn't understand him or like him or realize how important he was because he designed the ship and had it built and is there, you know, they turn on him basically and they accuse him of mutiny and sort of it ends with him sort of rotting in the brig. Really fun, you know, War of 1812 naval battle, U.S. versus U.K. You know, it's my jam. It's definitely not Ron's jam. But Andrea Moody, you know, like is perfect for this, has been all along. The character work has been really subtle and strong all the way through. You know, this is we talk about Brian Wood sort of a lot more reverently sort of as time goes on in terms of his work. And he's really learned what to put there and what not to. And he doesn't give too much. And it's a very not – it's like a mainstream style but done without any of the bombast. So it's like almost a tough sell if you're not interested in sort of the basic topics and the kind of theme that's going on. But right. For me, I am, and it's I don't read many of these stories, and I love these kind of stories. So it's really cool to see somebody applying all this sort of talent to it.
It's funny because it's like, yeah, these books are like made for you and Connor, and yep. I'm glad that they're not bad.
It's really good, and yeah, I've seen a lot that come out where I'll go, oh, I want to check that out, and they're bad. Like, they're very off. That's the other thing. Like, there's not a lot of Revolutionary War movies because they're bad.
Right.
Not because Revolutionary War is not interesting, but the people who made the movies are not good. World War One is another one of those. You know, when you watched it in Wonder Woman, you thought, I don't know anything about this war, and it's because the movies they've made from it are shitty, mostly, other than Paths of Glory, which everyone should watch. So when you get somebody good on that sort of subject, it can be really, really a special thing for those of us who like that, and hopefully, you know, other people can catch up with it. But if you read that first Rebel series, and I'm guessing this has even less word of mouth on it than the first one, these are out there and they exist from Dark Horse, and you should go read them.
All right, there it is. All right, so before we talk about more comics you should read, I just want to take a moment to tell you that if you enjoy ratings, or if you enjoy iFanboy or any of the fun stuff, you should go check out our t-shirt store that is up at ifanboy.threadless.com. And you can get to it by going to ifanboy.com. There's a link straight there to the t-shirt store as well. And there we got a bunch of t-shirt designs. We got more on the way. In fact, I've got like two or three that are currently in progress that you have not seen yet, Josh, but hopefully soon. We'll be rolling out new designs, so definitely check them out. But currently, you can go pick up the iFanboy logo shirt. You can pick up the classic Herm shirt that is in no way inspired by anything. Or you can pick up the Pick of the Week podcast recording shirt with art by artist Lars Brown. Or the brand new shirt, Ratings.
Ratings.
That I got a compliment on while in Texas last weekend. So while I was wearing
ratings.
It. So we said, nice shirt. I said,
you were rated.
I was rated. Ratings. So buying a t-shirt from iFanboy Threadless is a great way to help support iFanboy. But if you're looking for more direct ways to help support iFanboy, you can go to ifanboy.com/support. There you'll find a link to shop over at Amazon. And doing so by clicking that link and shopping at Amazon from iFanboy, you help us out in the process. We get a little cut from Amazon, not from you. No money from you at all. It all comes from Amazon. Let's be honest, they can afford it. If you'd like to give us a direct donation saying, hey, I like what you do, here's some change, kid. You could do that via PayPal. And we thank everybody who's done that recently. You guys are all very, very generous. And also, Eccentric Billionaires, we are for sale.
If Amazon wants to acquire me,
yes,
that is an option.
That is an option. And finally, the best way to help support iFanboy and the most direct way is to go to patreon.com/iFanboy. And that's where you can become a supporting member of the iFanboy Patron Nation. And we thank everybody there. Some of the perks you get by becoming an iFanboy patron is you get your name up on the website. There's a thank you page. If you guys haven't seen that, go check that out. I just updated it recently. As well as you can sign up and get some free swag. You get some pins and stickers as well as comics from our collection, literally from our long box into your hands if you sign up at the right level. And of course, what everybody loves and everyone's waiting for is we're giving out dumb patron names to anybody who signs up for $5 or higher. And we'll do that later in the show today. And of course, all iFanboy patrons get to participate in two things. One is you get to help vote on a book for us to discuss in the podcast, and we'll be talking about that later in the show as well. And you get to participate in our monthly patron hangouts, which are a ton of fun, more fun than Josh wants to admit.
They're fun.
Yeah, so if you're on the fence, now is the time, because we are a little less than $400 away from reaching our next goal, which is where we will add another podcast to our release schedule where we talk about something not comics related, whether it's movies or TVs or book or music or technology, I don't know, dating, food, wine, anything. So
probably not those last two out of three.
Well, I could do an hour on food.
I know, that wasn't what I meant.
Okay. The wine.
It's the wine where I think that we really, we're not good at it.
Yeah. No, we're not. I literally drink whatever you put in front of me, which is going to get me in trouble someday. Anyway, so go to patreon.com/iFanboy, sign up. We thank everybody for their support. Let's go back to the comics. You might remember a couple of months ago, one of my picks of the weeks was another indie book called The Dregs. From Black Mask. It was kind of a a noir-esque sad tale of Vancouver, where the city's homeless were being given bad drugs to overdose and then being cooked by a restaurant. Really, wow. really fucking dark. The Dregs number 4 came out this week. This wraps up the story. It's the last issue. You can pick this up and trade when it comes out. And it wraps up in as dark and bleak of a way as you would imagine. Our poor protagonist is unable to save the city and wrestles with succumbing to his addiction or pulling his life together. And it ends in a nice little black and white kind of Raymond Chandler kind of dialogue-y kind of fashion. Overall, really, really impressed by the whole team on this book. Zach Thompson, Lonnie Nadler, and Eric, and I know you listen, and I'm sorry because I can't pronounce your last name, Zodwisky or something like that. I know you even told me how, and I can't remember. But check out The Dregs. I enjoyed it a lot. This is a really good ending. It was a really good miniseries.
You sure it wasn't David Laugham?
No, it wasn't
Laugham. It sounded.
It sounds very – it's very Laugham-esque, which is good. So, but.
Yeah. I don't mean to get back on the Bendis – is awesome now train, because I'm sure I'll get mad about something stupid he does. No. But Infamous Iron Man number 9 came out, and
so good.
Not that, like, I was reading it and I was like, wait a minute, this is a Fantastic Four book.
Yeah, yep.
I was like, in the middle of this, I was like, this is a Fantastic Four book. And you know, we read what we read so often that, you know, taking Fantastic Four away and then bringing it back for just a little bit is like, oh, I think I've missed you.
Yep.
And it's sort of the early, like, Johnny and Ben Grimm can't stand to be around each other too much because it's just too painful.
Yep.
And they have, like, a secretive meeting in a diner or something like that. And it was like, this, I'm really, really, really interested. And then Doom's mother, whose name I'm not, Morgan Le Fay, kidnaps him from S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, it's a really good cliffhanger as sort of a single issue kind of thing goes. And I'm really interested in this book.
I'm really enjoying everything Bendis is doing with Iron Man. Yep. Either it being Doom as Iron Man or the Riri Williams stuff as Ironheart. It's really, really good. So
yeah.
I dig it a lot. I'm glad to hear you're enjoying it as well too.
I mean, it was like, I was like, this is great. This is real. I was almost, I'm almost surprised every time with this, because if you told me the story was, oh, it's Dr. Doom as Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know. But I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I like that. Lucifer number 19 came out this week. Apparently, this is the last issue of Lucifer, which was I don't know. I get these things wrong. But at the end, it said the end. And it was like they tied up every single storyline. Basically, God had been replaced by a mean God, a sort of different version of it. And it was Lucifer's job to sort of take him down, and then he had to install somebody else as God, and there were like 5 of these characters sitting around who were just humans, and he was like, well, one of you has to be God, I don't care which, and he walks out of the room and they're all kind of arguing with each other, and it's sort of that whole life is a joke kind of thing. It was a really good miniseries, a really good take on this character, based on Mike Carey's 65-ish issues probably a decade or so ago. Really fun. This came out, started about the same time as the new Hellblazer series started up, and they were both pretty good at the beginning, but Hellblazers, which also came out this week, really lagging behind in quality. But this was really a lot of fun. It was good. It was 19 issues, so.
Okay.
Great art by Lee Garbett through the whole thing, too.
Lee Garbett. I like Lee Garbett a lot.
Yep. So. Really good.
Excellent. All right, and so as we mentioned earlier, supporting iFanboy patrons can vote on a book every week. You can vote for a comic book that you want us to discuss. And if you go to patreon.com/iFanboy, if you're a supporting patron, there's this lively discussion and debate on the post every week, and it's a lot of fun to watch, as long as we keep it friendly, folks. Let's remember that as well, too. And so this week's patron pick was Clue number 1 from IDW, written by Paul Allure with art by Nelson Daniel. And this was it was not when the patron voting started. This came up from the bottom. In fact, I believe Elmer Fudd Batman was the pick for most of Wednesday, and then Clue kind of blew right past it and ended up with taking the top pick. And for those who aren't aware, I'm actually a big fan of Clue.
The movie or the game?
Both.
Okay. I
spent hours playing the game as a kid. Love the game of Clue. Just, I love how it was different every time, and it was deduction, and it was just a really good game.
Hold on. This isn't supposed to sound sad, but it's going to.
Okay.
Didn't you have to have 3 people to play that game? I can think it didn't. It was one of those games that like I had, but it didn't work with two people, and I never had a third person to play
with. I have no idea. I don't remember going, oh, I don't have enough people. Like, I always had friends.
Like, I remember having it, but being like, we can't ever play this because there's not enough people around.
Oh, that's so sad. I had friends.
It's not sad. It's just
it's just a fact. Anyway, so I love the game, but then I now, continuing as an adult, I adore the movie. I love the Tim Curry, Madeline Kahn, Michael McKean, Martin Mull. I mean, the movie the movie represents a certain point in time, right? Of Martin Mull. I mean, like, like it's this like mid 80s coming out of the late 70s kind of actors and actresses, and I to this day I quote it on a regular basis. So I love Clue. So when I saw that this was both out as well as the patron pick, I got a little worried.
So you would have had more fun doing this with Connor. I know that. So that's fine. It's not. I'm aware of the movie. I've seen it. I don't love. It's not one of my favorite. It's one of my wife's favorite movies, though. So I'm not.
She has taste, unlike you.
Well, she has different taste.
No, she has good taste.
It is a subjective thing. Well, about some things.
not everything, obviously.
No, I mean, like, no one can live up to my impeccable standards, which don't live up to your impeccable standards. So who can even say about these things? But it was very much done in the, like, I didn't really have any expectations, I guess. But it was very much done in the style of the movie. It was just
So before we get into the book, as I'm reading this and as I was telling my girlfriend about it, the question that has now become a catchphrase for the show was, who is this for? Because I don't know.
That's a good point.
Because so basically, like I mean, the comic is done. The only similarity that the comic has to the movie is that it's the same premise of there's a dinner party that all these people are invited to. But that's the premise of the game, right? So that's sure. That wasn't original to the movie. And
but
the decision.
The butler is a smart ass, and he knows what's going on, and he's talking to us. Yeah. Like, these are. Relay. Yeah. That's not from the game. That's
right.
From the movie.
And so, like, I also want to caveat that Paul Allure, and probably mispronouncing his last name, Allure. Yeah. Allure. Great guy, great writer. Like, he's been a long time member of our little comics community, you know, for a long time. And so, I don't want to disparage him in any way or disparage anything. But I just really like. I feel like there was a bunch of decisions that were made in this book that I was like, and mainly being the fact that. And maybe this, you know, this is a licensed book. Hasbro owns the rights to Clue, so maybe they say this is what we want to do or whatever. But the updating of the characters to match, having this take place today and changing Miss Scarlet to be an Australian pop star and Mr. Green to be a Martin Shkreli kind of, you know, pharma bro, you know, and like the subtle character changes to make them modern made me cringe a little. And then further, breaking the fourth wall, having the butler talk to us as the reader and acknowledge that this is a comic book, made me cringe a little more. That said, on the positive side, I like the fact that they drop clues in the comic outside of the comic. Like, in the physical book, there's a clue in the inside cover. There's more pages after the back matter. Like, they made it fun to read, as it should, because Clue is interactive. So I like that angle of it. It's just the setting and the characterization and then the fourth wall stuff made me struggle a little.
So I'm going to disagree with you on almost all of the things.
All right. Wow. Good.
Sort of. Not really. I hear what you're saying. But the opposite of making these characters updated was just to do the characters again. And what would be the point of that?
Right. And I can't necessarily say that just do the movie and have it take place in the 50s and all that sort of stuff makes sense. I would, you know, if they did that, I'd be like, oh, that's unfortunate. You know what I mean? So I get that I'm building in an impossible expectation, much like most of our life.
I think that who is it for? It's for people who remember that and want some more. Or it's for, you know, I think this is one of those movies that kids who are younger than us find and like.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just a new outlet to that. And it's like, well, what can you do with this? And so to me, I don't think you had any other choice but to make up new characters.
Well, they're the same characters. And I think, they're the same. I mean,
I know, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they're based on, you know, the stuff in the game, but they're just names, you know, with sort of basic archetypes.
And in Paul's defense, I recently played Clue with my nieces, and it's a new version of Clue, and they have been they've been updated in the game as well. And in fact,
because they shouldn't make things for old people.
The game also, because we ruin things. That's us men in our fat men in our 40s are ruining everything. But in the game, not only have they updated the characters, but they also, the board flips now, and one side is the mansion, and the other side is a Santa Cruz-esque beach boardwalk scene.
Oh.
Yeah, and like, and the, and instead of there being rooms, it's like, go to the surf shop. Go to the smoothie stand. Go to the-
So to carry on, I mean, I think that I'm guessing that that reimagining of the characters or sort of recasting them a little bit, that either could have come from, you know, look, what's your pitch for this or what would you do differently? And I understand that choice. Or it could have just been a mandate from the licensor. So then the next thing is, like, how do you build that game and that movie? And I think he did take from the movie in sort of a format sense, into a narrative comic book story. And to me, the like, I'd be, that's hard to do this kind of mystery romp thing in within the format of a comic. So I was impressed by that, but it should be said, it's totally, I'm not that audience. Like, I don't care.
Right.
If that makes it, like, I don't want to look for clues. I don't want to have an interactive reading experience. I want you to tell me a story and entertain me. And there are people who have more attention and time and energy than I do who this is probably great for.
Right.
So I actually read this twice.
Okay.
Because I tried to read it last night after being on, like, a two-day-long driving trip with my kids. And I was like, it went right through me. but I read it again today and I was like, okay, this is actually really well done and interesting. And it's actually unique as a comic book, I think. That said, like, it's, I don't really care. I don't care who did it. I don't care who won. It's, I don't want to do the thing. But if you are into this thing, I think I can safely say that this is really pretty good. That's what I think I would go with. The art also by Nelson George, whose name I know. I think he worked with Jason Ciaramella on The Cape, maybe?
Nelson Daniel, sorry.
Nelson George is somebody else, like an actor. Okay. Anyway, Nelson Daniel, who's I really like his work a lot, basically.
Yeah, I got a lot of early Riley Rossmo proof vibe from this.
Yeah.
From the art. You know, like not as messy Riley Rossmo, but like the restrained. I actually really like the art. I did like the art a lot, so yeah.
And you've got all these different characters that he can't, you know, he can't distinguish one another with a superhero suit. And they can do it a little bit with color because that's, you know,
that's the game. Yeah. Professor Plum.
But I thought the character designs were strong for basically what were a bunch of humans. I thought it was fun. I thought this was probably as good as you could do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Without having, you know, Frank Miller on it or something, you know, I mean, without sort of bringing in the huge guns of comic book making. I was impressed.
Yeah. So in the game, the game was created in 1949, which is interesting, by a guy in Leeds, England. And in the game now, the game is set in a mansion in Massachusetts in 1954, which is what the movie picks up on, right? Mm-hmm. And the movie plays up the communism, you know, kind of the social satire of the time, right? You know, like the fear of communism, you know, like, and things like that. With it being set now, I know there were little things that were changed, you know, like, so Mrs. White was changed into, you know, she's a senator. And, you know, and Colonel Mustard,
Cuban senator. Yeah. She's Cuban American.
Yeah. And Colonel Mustard was a general in Afghanistan, right? So they're updating that. I would have liked to have seen a little more social, like, not social commentary, but social reference to how those roles fit in today, as opposed to it being a little more madcap, which goes back to, who is this for? You know, like, if this is for kids go along with the game, then sure, this is fine. But, you know,
I think it's treading a line. Yeah. Like, I think that those things are there. And I mean, like, basically you've got commerce versus government. You have government talk. You have this. I mean, these are the issues of the day, as far as I'm concerned. You've got this pharmaceutical thing. So healthcare is a big deal. The different government people, the general person. Then you have a celebrity pop star person, you know, those are everything that's wrong with our world, as far as I can tell.
Right.
So it's there, you know, and he's got, what, 20 pages?
Yeah.
Like I said, like, I think it's in keeping with that.
Okay. All right. So that said, ratings.
4.
4.
I had to think.
Wow. 4. That's a very high rating for you. My rating, I give it a 3. Sticking with it.
I want to say yes, but I probably won't.
Yeah, I'm not going to stick with it.
So. I think it's a really impressive exercise of a thing that I don't know. It's like, isn't this a great reggae album?
Yeah, yes, it is. I don't know if it's if it's really impressive. I think it's a good exercise. But I don't know, you know, again, I don't know if I'm super impressed. And like, if you took away the fourth wall stuff, and even if you had the fourth wall stuff, but didn't like have half a page dedicated to showing the editor, like it could be,
I didn't like that.
Yeah. I just a little too self-indulgent for me. And that turns me off usually. So, but okay. But
it's playful and I liked that it was playful.
Yeah.
I liked that part of it.
Yeah. The problem is that like, I think the thing with this is that it's a harmless comic book, right?
Sure.
And in that, I don't think it – and again, I know it's hard with licenses, and I know that it's, you know, challenges with working with, you know, kind of publishers like IDW and things like that who are basically, you know, the Hasbro
– Property Farms.
Is their client. Right, exactly. But I guess, you know, the problem is that it's Clue is the product – is the game. That's the best thing it's got going for it. And I would have liked to have seen a little more pushing the boundaries to make it something more than just the game. But I get it. So there it is.
I mean, if I had
it's innocent. It's innocent in that way.
But I think it's a board game. Like
yeah,
it's,
exactly.
It's,
yeah.
I feel like it's pushing on those things is probably as much as it's allowed to.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
If I had any criticism, I think that it sticks to the you know, the idea of the movie. It didn't reinvent that.
Right, yeah, which sticks to the idea of the game, though, which makes sense.
Sure,
which I get that as well too. I don't know. I would have I get not going back to 1954 for the movie and the game would make sense, but if you're gonna do it now, I would like it to be a little more biting. And then if not, then maybe do it in 1974. You know, give me a different time period. I don't know.
A roll of the dice.
Yeah, I know. So. All right, well, if you want to vote on a book for us to talk about, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy, sign up, become a patron at any level, even a dollar a month, less than a candy bar now, because we live in a horrible world where candy bars cost more than a dollar. You could vote on a book for us to talk about on the show.
And yet we're all still getting fat.
I know, it's crazy.
Every week, we think of a few people who have supported us at patreon.com/ifanboy, which I believe Ron has already touched on. Yeah. And we give them dumb superpowers. Maybe not dumb. Sometimes when they're not dumb, it's unintentional. They're supposed to be dumb. And then we're like, well, they're just kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, Ron, you're up first.
All right. We want to thank Thomas Cronin for helping support iFanboy. And Thomas Cronin is a living antenna.
Go on.
So, basically, you got a TV with an antenna. It's got shady reception. He puts his hand on the TV. It pops into clear view. You got a radio. You can't quite make out the ball game. He puts his hand on the radio. Crystal clear.
He's going to stay there?
That's the problem. He's going to stay there.
I feel like I've lived this. I feel like I've been that guy, and it's not a good job.
No, it's not. He has to be holding on the device, but he can receive things loud and clear, crystal clear, and help the device trying to receive it. So
I guess you really did want a story from 1974.
Yeah.
Because this is what life was then, as I understand it. I have a little glimpse of it from the past.
Yeah.
Alan Travis, he's a time traveler.
Really?
He can travel 10 seconds forward or backward.
Wow. Only 10 seconds, though.
Only 10 seconds.
Okay. So he can jump ahead. It's kind of like he's like a living choose your own adventure.
Well, imagine that you're
in
an annoying...
Can he go back? So wait. Okay. So it's 1:03. I can jump ahead 10 seconds in time to hear whether this is going to be a funny joke. Here it's not. Can I go back and then tell another joke? Is 10 seconds enough leeway to do anything with that?
This is the challenge that Alan lives with. Say, for example, that you fall down the stairs. If you stop, he comes to a rest before 10 seconds is up, he can go over and prevent that, or at least... Or, you know, like you've knocked something over on the table. You drop your phone in the toilet. These kinds of things.
Yeah.
I feel like you could do something with that. I feel like 10 seconds is... I mean, I did write it, so...
Yeah. Wow. All right. And so my last patron I want to thank is... Well, you get another one, but next two. I want to thank Kyle France for helping support iFanboy. And Kyle has the ability to not get dizzy. He can spin and spin and spin and spin. Won't get dizzy.
He can that go would have on. Been useful.
He can
this
go.
Weekend.
I was gonna say, yeah. He can go on the Gravitron at the Carney traveling carnival. And not get dizzy. He can wherever he, whatever it might go on. He just he's got always got a center of balance. So
okay, we had to actually stop the Tilt-A-Whirl ride.
Really? Why?
So my wife could get off. So. And the kids were totally into it, and I was like, I don't think I'm allowed to have fun right now. Because it's very fun. And the last time that I went on it, like a year ago, I thought, maybe I can't handle this anymore. But this year, I came back strong. So yeah. I just learned not to do it right after lunch. Not so with her. She had to get off immediately. And then we went and did stuff by ourselves for an hour while she sat and recollected herself. Being old is fun. Rob Carmack can always jump the line. One way or another, he's getting to the front of that line. He does not wait in lines.
Yeah. All right.
It's a little like is he like cutting? Long shot.
Is he cutting and people don't realize? Or? Nah,
it's a little like long shot. He can just get there. He's persuasive. He's either putting off pheromones or he's doing something that people. He gets to the front line and people aren't mad at him for it.
Wow.
You know what? Right this way, Mr. Carmack. Really? Are you sure it's gonna be fine? No, it's please. It would be our pleasure. And everyone lines like, yeah, sure, totally, go ahead.
It's like long shot.
It applies to merging on the highway.
Nice. So that's a power in and of itself.
You know, public mass transit. Airports are. He doesn't even know, sort of what you know. Like, not only is it you're the front of the line to get in, like through security or get onto the plane or whatever, but like when there's a delay, they're immediately like, oh, here, you just go get on this plane. You'll get where you need to. Oh, well, thank you. And he's very polite about it. He's very deferential. It's a happy accident that happens for him.
All right. Well, there you go. Good job, Thomas, Allen, Kyle, and Rob. Thank you for your support. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy where you can become a supporting member and get your own superpowers. So let's do some email.
Okay. First up is Matt Kelly from East Northport, New York, who seems like a plant.
Represent.
My brother and I were reminiscing about our first convention experience, which happened to be an Ithacon show in the early 90s. I remember you guys went to school in Ithaca, New York, and I'd love to hear about each of your first con experiences. Maybe it was one of the Ithacon gatherings. I've been thinking about this question since Ithacon 93, Ithacon 18 maybe, where my brother Brian won a trivia contest hosted by William Messner Loebs, who got name checked earlier in the show, and his prize was a can of Spam. That's so nerdy. That's I know where that nerdy stuff is coming from, and it's comforting in a little bit.
Yeah.
My first show was at Ithacon. It was with you after you tried to kill me in a snowstorm. But I imagine that was not your first convention.
No, actually, it wasn't. Yeah. Well, so let's tell the so first off, Matt, good to see you from East Northport. Always good to see somebody from the hometown. Although I am from Northport, not East Northport, but we won't make that distinction. Fun fact, East Northport located south of Northport, not east.
Go wacky figure. Shit out there.
So our first con experience together was Ithacon 98, 99. I forget what year it was. I don't know what number it was, but Kurt Busiek was the featured guest, and it was a snowy day. And I hit a patch of ice on a hill and wrecked a Saab, and I was able to drive away from the accident. Remember the
not a mark.
And the I screwed up my front left bumper. That panel was screwed up. But we went to the con. Like, we still went.
We went to the con.
Yeah, but and I remember I broke the girl who I hit was driving a Saab, and basically like my front left hit her front left tire, and I think I broke her axle.
Wow.
Yeah, which is, I felt bad. Like, she was,
And, you know, company's not around anymore? Saab.
Yeah, exactly. In our defense, it was icy, it was a light snow, and I was going maybe 10 miles an hour. I was going very slowly down that hill.
It was super slow. But it was one of those things where you turn the wheel and
nothing happened. Nothing. And you and I spent a good 20 seconds motioning for her to move. I remember that we're going move, and she didn't. So.
Sort of like the crippled swimmer kind of. Ah! Okay. Yep.
Oh man.
And then I believe we left you there, and you made your way down later.
Right. Yes.
I do not remember how I got there though. Yeah. I might have driven. I don't know.
Anyway,
so that was
so we went to Ithacon. That was fun. We saw Kurt Busiek in a high school. Like, I think it was at like the Ithaca High School, I think it was, whatever. But my first con experience was earlier, was actually in late middle school, and it was Icon, which, and I don't know what year or what number it was, but it was Icon It must have been 1990 or 91, and that was at Stony Brook University on Long Island. And Icon historically was like a sci-fi con, you know, like that sort of thing. And comics had a little bit of a presence. This is how old it was. Marvel had a table there, not in the main exhibit hall, but like outside, and Bob Harris was manning the table. And that's where I had a very awkward conversation with him about whether or not Jim Lee was related to Stan Lee.
Had you not?
I'd never seen Jim Lee. This is before Image, and Jim Lee was the hot artist, and I was like, oh, are they related? And he's like, oh, no, they're not. He didn't tell me that Jim Lee was Asian. He didn't say that at all. He just said, no, they're not related. And I was like, oh, are you sure? Because they're both Lee. And like,
oh, keep
in mind, this is like 1990, so we don't have the internet, we don't have social media, we don't have all this stuff. I didn't know what the dude looked like, and so yeah, so that was very awkward. And I believe and then I talked to Bob Harris about Wills Portacio. I was like, that Wills Portacio guy's amazing. He's like, yeah, he's really good. I was like, oh, thanks. And if memory serves, at that con, I bought a resin statue of Wolverine that you could put together and paint yourself.
Okay, yep.
And then I do believe I bought a photocopied script of the Twin Peaks pilot.
Wow, you are on brand.
Yeah, it really was.
Awkward conversation with the head of the X-Men group.
Yeah.
Wolverine paintable statue and a Twin Peaks script. Wow. Yeah. So... my story of that show will always be connected with Walt Simonson, because we went down there and there was a line. Never been to a show. I really literally had no idea about what it was or what to expect. Or it was all sort of new. I'd only started getting back into comics in the last year or so from that. Thanks to our friend Connor and a couple of his friends who I had lived with, who had a bunch of comics around. So, and I had been a comic reader for a little while in sort of the 11, 12, 13 area. And then I stopped. But I remembered Walt Simonson because his art and his Thor stories had made a complete impact on me when I was a kid. So I never forgot him. So I was there and people were getting sketches and I was like, oh, okay. I borrowed a piece of paper from somebody. And I asked him, can you draw a Thor with the hammer? Like, cause he was just doing head sketches. I was like, but can you put the hammer in it? And so it was a headshot basically with his sort of hair, his hand above his head, like holding the hammer sideways, which I'm miming now for nobody's benefit but myself. but it's sort of in perspective and he's got that big hand. And he was like, oh, okay. And for a second it was like, is this okay to ask? He had that look like, I don't know if you can ask me for this. And I didn't know that I couldn't. So he did it. And then when he was done, he showed it to his wife, Louise or Wheezy, and he was impressed with himself. Nice. And he was like, look at that.
That's
nice. And I was very happy. It is on my wall to this day. I'm so proud of that. And then, 20 years later, now probably it was probably 16 years later at the time, I met him at the con. We interviewed him for the show and everything. And he is he's like every bit the guy you want a guy who you really, really respect and like to be.
Yeah.
To this day. So I really love that memory. It's sort of a great moment.
Great, good memories. All right, so if you have a question and if you want to make us go down memory lane, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com to get your question on the show. Make sure you mention your name, where you're from. Kudos if you're from Northport or the greater Northport Huntington area in New York. Let us know how long you've been thinking about your question, and you can also send in an MP3 or a audio file if you want us to play a voicemail. So it's always good to hear from you. And thank you, Matt, for writing in. I'll see you at Paradise Pizza.
I didn't know where that was going to go.
I'll see you at the Carvel. I'll see you at the deli. Can I tell you, the deli in Northport, they make the best iced tea, and it still comes in a styrofoam cup. And every time I go there, my girlfriend's like, how is that legal? It's like, I don't know.
Just where's he getting these?
I haven't seen a piece of styrofoam between San Francisco and New York City. I haven't seen this piece of styrofoam in years. And then I go back to Long Island and I get this like oversized styrofoam cup full of iced tea. And I'm pretty sure the styrofoam affects the taste of the iced tea.
Oh, it's if nothing else, it's a tactile thing.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, the squeak, the
uh-huh.
Yeah, that's great.
It doesn't... it doesn't sweat through the cup.
No, yeah, no, it's great.
The way that plastic
styrofoam
works.
I mean, sure, it doesn't degrade for
this.
A million years.
Keep going. Go on. Oh, I can't wait.
I mean, let's say, sure, there's an entire landfill in Comac that goes up about six stories full of styrofoam, but It really was effective from a beverage holding device and keeping it cold. Oh, it's great. So
Styrofoam gets a bad rap. Along with chlorine gas and thalidomide.
Listen, all I know is that my walls have never retained heat better than when there was asbestos in them.
Tell you something, that DDT got rid of bugs. Say what you will, it got rid of the bugs. So we've got a couple of podcasts coming up you should be knowing about. There's a Talksplode for June. Yes, I recognize what you're thinking now. But it will be coming out very soon. It's lined up. There's just a little bit of a scheduling conflict. And here's why. Creator has a new baby. And if you know anything about new babies, you got to work around that a little bit. So that's going to happen, I think, in the next week. I think you will have this in the next week. But it's a creator I'm super excited to talk about books that I know a lot of the listeners care about. So it'll be good times.
And then we will have a Booksplode for July. And I believe we're determining the book. We'll probably figure that out next week. So we'll tweet. We'll let everyone know what it is. We'll let you know on the show next week when we know what that is as well. Also coming up next week opens Spider-Man Homecoming, the next comic book movie that we will be discussing.
I know that headofgeek.com Chris Radke is quite effusive about it.
Everyone's been raving. The advance reviews have been great. I've got my tickets to see it next week. Very excited. So we will definitely get a group together of some folks to talk about it at some point. So. And then, of course, if you're watching Twin Peaks on Showtime, you should be listening to my other show over at Damn Fine Podcast, where I'm joined by Tom Merritt, and we were talking about Twin Peaks, The Return. We're recording immediately after we watch the show on Sunday nights and then getting it out to you ASAP, and talking to some comic creators about having them come on the show as guests. So definitely, if you like comics, there's a lot of crossover between Twin Peaks fans and comics creators. So definitely go to DamnFinePodcast.com and subscribe and check it out. And of course, you can go to ifanboy.com where you can subscribe to this podcast as well as check out all of our previous episodes and join the discussion there. So there's always some great comments and things like that. I always like to see what everyone's saying in response to what books you're enjoying. So go to ifanboy.com where you can comment on the show. If you're on Facebook, you can go like us over at facebook.com/ifanboy. And you can follow us on Twitter @ifanboy. And that's where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And you can find out, you can follow us individually if you so please on Twitter and Instagram. Connor is @CSKilpatrick. Josh is @JAFlanagan. I'm @RonXO.
And if you like this show, please write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell people about the show. Tell your friends, tell whoever you think might be interested in this kind of thing. That is always the best and most valuable thing that we can ask for from you, except for the money, which we talked about earlier, which we like.
Yeah.
No, but you are honestly our advertising and marketing arm, and that's what, and we're still touched and pleased every time somebody does that. So thank you.
Cool. That's fun.
That will do.
That will do. It was fun times. I'm going to go get a styrofoam cup of iced tea and revel in it. So until next time, I'm Ron.
How much of an impact could you make, though? I mean, honestly.
I know. Exactly. It's a drop in the bucket.
It's an endless permanent bucket that will always, always, always be there. Oh, I'm Josh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.